There's like three things I think that are kind of an overflow of the rejection of Christianity and faith in God. You got evolution, abortion, gay rights, basically. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Athos Life Podcast, where we discuss ideas, topics, and events that help us shape a life of strength, purpose, and excellence. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to The Ascent. In this episode, we're going to be discussing the detrimental impacts of evolutionary theory and how your worldview can shape how you live. Joe, do you have any thoughts before we get going here?
Yeah, let's begin by just like defining some terms here. Yep. Because when you talk about evolution, you know, there is aspects where we all agree, where we're all evolutionists and whatnot. So I think that can be a helpful place. So there's kind of like maybe three categories. There is the evolutionist, the Darwinian evolutionist, who would be what scripture, Psalm 14 would say is a fool. The fool says in his heart, there is no God.
Right.
So that would be your Darwinian evolutionist who, you know, I think you have a quote from Richard Dawkins that we're gonna talk about. He would be the kind of the classic biblical fool because he says in his heart there is no God.
Right.
And then there are people who would embrace evolution who also don't say in their heart that there is no God, but they just don't particularly take literally, the historic account of Genesis 1-3 as the creation account.
Right.
So that'd be another category. And then there would be the category where I think you and I would both fit in, which is where we see Genesis 1-3 as actual history.
Right.
It's biblically authoritative in describing what happened at the origin of the world.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, a helpful characteristic, if you're a helpful definition, I should say, mm-hmm. for our listeners.
Right.
Are they, what category do they fall into?
Right.
You don't want to be in the first category because that's what a fool does.
Yeah.
But in that second category, if you're a Christian and you're persuaded by the Darwinian evolutionary arguments, hopefully this podcast will be an encouragement to not.
Right.
But also, hopefully it'll help you to see some of the discernment issues that can come about by embracing a worldview like that. And the last definition I would say is, I said at the beginning, we're all evolutionists mm-hmm. to a certain extent. Well, because we all recognize that there's all kinds of change within mm-hmm. species.
Right.
So that kind of evolution, we are not something new.
Yeah.
Nor was Charles Darwin in recognizing that there was lots of change within species.
Right.
Where we reject would be the idea of cross-species evolutionary kind of macro evolution, where one species can become an entirely new species through the pressure of natural selection and mutation.
Yeah.
So hopefully those are some helpful definitions to start the discussion with.
Yep, absolutely. So I think we're going to start off, like, from a Christian perspective, how this kind of impacts directly how we live is because our presupposition is that from Acts 17:28, one of my favorite verses, Paul's talking to the Greeks, and he says, "In him, God, we live and move and have our being." So that kind of fundamentally frames how we're living, and our life is sustained and given to us by God, mm-hmm. and so that shapes how we live. Charles Darwin said it himself that he believed that the fossil record would bear out his presupposition. That hasn't been the case today, and so now they've changed their evidence to be the DNA. Our DNA is similar in these areas.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I was just listening to a debate. I think it was Richard Dawkins. He was talking about that. He's like, well, we might not have fossils, but the DNA is our strongest evidence. And like, that's, you can't deny that. And so it's like, how do you look at it if that's your fundamental basis for it, is just looking at the DNA rather than if your presupposition is God made all things similar versus these things adapted and have stemmed from each other, and that's why we have a common ancestry there. So it's an interesting topic. I kind of want to start here with kind of how, because there's like three things I think that are kind of an overflow of like the rejection of Christianity and faith in God. You've got evolution, abortion, and then like gay rights, basically, LGBTQIA movement. Those are like the three things today that even if you're a like solid Christian, or not solid Christian, but like somebody who believes in God, is familiar with these ideas, they still stick with us today and they impact like the culture. Hmm. If you could be a conservative and still be pro-abortion, still be an evolutionist or theistic evolution, however you want to frame it, and then still be like, yeah, people should love whoever they want to love. Hmm. And so I think when it comes to fitness,
well, you wouldn't be a conservative, but you would,
yeah. you would be like a modern day conservative.
Yeah, you'd be maybe a Republican.
Yeah, you could be a Republican. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, right. So but this kind of overflow was specific with evolution. You have Charles Darwin, 1859. You've got the Scopes trial in 1925. And then you have in 1968, the decision in Epperson versus Arkansas overturned the state laws banning evolution teaching, solidifying in its place the curriculum for today. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like the history. And so where we're at today is it's kind of assumed. People don't really talk about origins anymore. Like, they're not saying, like, it's really hard for them to, for a scientist, if you're listening to them talk, to start with like evolution from like the beginning. Hmm. They just assume today this comes from evolution, and they just talk about it in a yep. general sense
yep.
because it's really hard to be like, this is how it was exactly happened.
Right.
So
it's very similar actually to like climate change.
Right.
You know, the media loves to trot out the 97% of scientists agree that climate change is really happening,
right.
but that the pool of scientists that they're pulling from
right.
are scientists who apply for grants that are government-funded grants right. where you have to set out to prove climate change to be true because yep. that's the policy. That's what yep. everybody has agreed on. So, yeah, 97% might agree that climate change is real, but that's only from the pool of those who just assume that climate change is real to begin with.
Right.
They're not willing to challenge the assumption.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that Jesus famously said that we need to be as wise as serpents. Mm-hmm. We need to be as innocent as doves. We need to be as wise as serpents. And I think Christians have, in particular, been quite gullible in the name of science to just follow what people have said is scientifically accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Evolution is probably maybe with climate change being a close second, one of the most sloppy sciences that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
If science, if we can all agree that science is based off of observation,
mm-hmm.
off of repeatability, off of the ability, off of not just simply conjecture or mythologizing.
Right.
And evolutionists are amazing. They are incredible world builders.
Yeah.
They build these incredible myths. They're unbelievably creative.
Right.
Like they really have a true gift in storytelling,
right.
but they do it in the name of science.
Yeah.
And many Christians are taken in. Well, that's the scientific fact.
Right.
But when it comes to origins, the scientific method needs to be seen as the tool that it is.
Right.
It's just inadequate to explain right. things that are not observable.
Yeah.
So it's perfect for building a bridge. It's perfect for trying to solve diseases. It's perfect right. for trying to get to Mars. You need science for all of that. But if you're trying to figure out what happened, you know, 5,000 years ago
yeah.
or supposedly 50 million years ago, the scientific method is just inadequate for that because you have to just base everything on conjecture.
Yeah.
And that's not what science is.
Right. Yeah.
So really, one of my big encouragements to our listeners would be, you know, be more skeptical. We need more Christian skeptics.
Right.
Too often you have the Richard Dawkins of the world who are the supposed skeptics.
Right.
But they're not skeptical at all when it comes to evolution. That's yeah. just their presupposition.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Christians need to be more skeptical. Like my older kids are reading through right now in school Darwin's Origin of Species.
Yeah.
And they're doing that because, you know, primary sources are really important,
mm-hmm.
not just simply some popularizer of Darwin.
Right.
So you got to actually read Darwin himself.
Right.
And if you read him and you read him with a skeptical mind, you recognize right away that he's guessing on
right.
so much
right.
stuff.
Right. Absolutely.
And he's hoping at least that future scientific achievements will prove what he's saying.
Yeah.
And he recognizes, hey, this is just a guess.
Right.
But hopefully, you know, this will be proved later on,
yeah.
which of course it never is, but nobody right. ever quite questions that.
Yeah.
So let's have a little bit more skepticism, shall
yeah,
we?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a famous evolutionist that said, it might be Richard Dawkins, might be somebody else, but they said science, the evolutionary theory is like works well for us as long as you grant us one miracle.
Yeah.
And I'm paraphrasing it, but that like right. they want to accept that the origin is a miracle.
Sure.
And they can't figure out based on like the scientific method of repeatability and like being able to observe everything. But they have to have that one miracle.
Yeah.
They have to have that one thing that is just like the creation.
Right.
It's like, we weren't there, we don't know, but they have to have that as well. But then they want to criticize us because we believe in a God that controls
it's a fairy tale, sky daddy, that kind of
thing. Exactly, yeah.
You know, but even then, even if you grant them the one miracle, I still think that there is this idea that mutations along with natural selection pressure moves species not only forwards evolutionary, mm-hmm. but actually diverges them into different species entirely. If you actually observe most mutations, mm-hmm. Almost all mutations are negative.
Right.
Almost all mutations end in the death of the not the species, but of the individual,
right.
much quicker than if the mutation hadn't happened.
Right.
And so built into the assumption, even if you grant the one miracle, is that mutation along with natural selection pressure will drive species forward because of that innate desire to survive.
Right.
But mutations don't do that, at least the ones we can observe.
Right.
The ones we observe shorten lifespans and actually oftentimes end in the death of the species itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so even granting the one miracle, the whole premise of just natural selection pressure kind of blindly moving things forward, basic laws of entropy destroy that
right.
idea. Things do not move from order to order. They move from order to chaos.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Right.
That's what's observable.
Yeah.
You don't see the opposite happening where chaos moves into order, which is primarily the foundation of Darwinian evolution.
Have you seen this whole thing with the direwolves?
No, I haven't.
They remade direwolves.
Oh, yeah. I did see that, right.
Yeah. Huh? It's a little bit creepy.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where they... I mean, that's the type of evolution that I would believe in. Like, you had the direwolves, and they died off, and the ones that had micro adaptations to their environment, like the thing with their premise is that direwolves were bigger and slower because they had to take down bigger and slower game. When the bigger and slower game died off due to cataclysmic events or hunting from humans, that the direwolves didn't have a food source, so they died off. The faster, smaller ones were still able to eat the faster, smaller prey, like deer. But then the direwolves died off because they couldn't hunt those things. That's the type of like evolution that I would say, because you had, I believe, at creation there was a much greater genetic makeup, and then as, like you're saying, the degradation of genetics from after the flood I think it's clearly observable.
Yeah,
and Yeah.
Well, in going back to the scripture that we started, in him we move and we have our being, mm-hmm. right? We move and live and have our being. And it says in Colossians chapter 1 that in Christ, all things are being held together.
Right.
So literally, at the atomic level, Jesus is holding the world together.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is, so I think you can look at, I don't think you necessarily have to have like a de-evolutionary perspective
right.
of like man is getting worse or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you have to recognize is that, is it dire wolves?
Yeah.
Okay. So
D-I-R-E.
Why did the dire wolves come back? Well, because some people decided to creatively come up with, map out a DNA, map out supposed DNA, and then create something that they say is now, you know, this extinct species.
Right.
But how did that happen? Well, it happened because there was this outside force that created something. It just didn't happen.
Right.
And so even in bringing back an extinct species, which I think we should even be skeptical somewhat of, what is this actually?
Right, that was my thought. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not buying that this is like Jurassic Park.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. For sure.
But at the same time, it's like, even that shows that these kinds of things don't just happen on their own.
Yeah.
It takes the outside work of something. In this case, it was man. But in the beginning, it was God speaking the world into existence.
This is an interesting topic, and we could probably like go way farther down this than we actually need to, but you don't, maybe you do, but that man has lost like the strength of his genetic makeup since from Adam and Eve?
I don't think you have to take that okay. view. I think that there's, you know, I believe the Bible in all the parts that should be taken literally, I take them literally. Okay. So when it says that Adam was 930 right. years old when he died, I don't believe that was some metaphor for right. his lineage or something yeah. like that. That was Adam.
Right.
So Adam almost made it to 1,000 years old. So, yeah. so yeah, there's definitely some tremendous degradation right. that has taken place. And I would say, yes, from as a result of the flood, as a result of the, you know, kind of the second curse on mm-hmm. mankind because of our wickedness. So absolutely. I think where I maybe would say in the past 4,000 years, mm-hmm. I don't know that there's necessarily okay. a tremendous amount of degradation right. in the genetic pool since right. the flood.
So it's like a quick drop off and then a stabilization.
I would say so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so we've kind of addressed kind of how the impact on education and science is negatively, like basically how you view the world. If you look at it from this like rocky foundation, you're going to have problems in other areas. Quick example, there's like a, I forget how to say his name. It's like Gad Saad or something like that. He's an evolutionary biologist, and he basically is trying to take evolution and apply it to other areas of life. So like evolutionary biology to finances. Like why do rich people do the things that they do? Why doesn't a rich person buy a super nice car? Why do they invest in art? Well, because they have to stand out from their peers. This is an evolutionary thing.
Sure.
You can't just have the thing that everybody else can have. You have to buy something weird. And so that's the type of thing he does with evolutionary biology.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were to look at these types of things from a creation perspective, it gives a moral perspective to it. Should the super rich billionaire be trying to buy art because he wants to stand aside from his peers? Mm-hmm. Rather than just observing that as a thing and saying, like, this is why they do that, is that good or bad? Mm. I think that's when it comes to education and science, having that moral compass for the things that we're doing and the things that God created us to do is super important.
Absolutely. Yeah. So. If you don't have your first causes figured out, mm-hmm. then we're literally just fizzing molecules right. here, and we're going to fizz out in a, you know, maybe 70 years, or if by reason of strength, 80,
right.
we're going to be dead and gone. And then everything we did, whether we were a billionaire or whether we lived a life of poverty,
yeah.
It actually doesn't matter in the big scheme of things mm-hmm. at all.
Right.
But if you start from the fact that we are created in the image of God, that he created us with the express purpose of glorifying himself, then all of those questions about whether or not a billionaire should buy art or
right.
or should be a patron of the arts
right.
or should take their great wealth and build up Christendom with it.
Right.
Like all of those questions now have at least a place to begin.
Right.
Whereas when you have just the again, we're kind of, this is Psalm 14, the fool says in his heart there is no God. If you say Darwinian evolution is clearly true, it clearly disproves God, there is no one out there is no right or wrong, there's no evil, there's no good, the universe is essentially indifferent to whatever it is that you do,
right.
then you have to now make the case that, well, from an evolutionary standpoint, it's good for you to be sacrificial to your neighbor because it helps the community, the right. survival of the community,
yeah.
as opposed to the individual.
Right.
Well, you know, Darwinian evolution is inherently individualistic
right.
in terms of like my survival,
yeah.
not so much the survival of my people.
Right.
Because if this is all there is, what do I care? I want to squeeze every drop of life that I can.
Yeah.
Because I know that there's nothing else.
Yeah.
So again, I think oftentimes the devil takes the things that are good, because the devil can never create anything. All he can do is corrupt.
Right.
So he takes these things that actually do have, like, there are evolutionists out there who have tremendously keen insights into human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And right. we should learn from them.
Yeah.
But we should reject utterly the worldview that brought about that insight.
Right.
Because Jesus says oftentimes the children of darkness or the children of this world are more savvy. They're more what in the parable of the unjust steward, he says the children of this world are oftentimes wiser than the children of light.
Mm-hmm.
So we have tremendous things to learn without being persuaded and kind of romanced by, well, if I accept this this notion of Darwinian evolution, now I'll be kind of accepted as being not one of those kind of backwards fairy tale believing Christians.
Right.
Now I believe a new fairy tale.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So we can kind of just walk through here, like fitness and the purpose of man and kind of how it affects these areas. If we're looking at an evolutionary perspective, reduces the body to mere biology, clashing with the Christian emphasis on sacred purpose, promoting fitness ideals based on biological necessity rather than spiritual health. Like you're talking about there, this is just a biological thing. This is just a need that you have to have to survive. I think the interesting thing for me is if somebody says you need to be fit today, for what purpose? Because our where we're at today, based on an evolutionary perspective, we don't need to. I can sit at a desk and do my job just fine. Why do I need to be fit? Mm-hmm. Well, you feel better if you do that way. I know I feel great doing the thing that I'm doing. It's like, well, you're not going to live as long. Okay, so we can just go. You can go down that road. That
you could also just say, well, it's genetic. It's the luck of the genetic law, because there's all sorts of very unfit, very unhealthy people who live to 100. Because genetically, they just drew the, you know, they won the lottery, so to speak. So you can kind of reject all of those kind of evolutionary reasons, because nobody's making it to nobody's cheating death,
right? Absolutely.
You know, I think you can make a good case that, like, well, it'd be nice to not spend the last 10 years of your life drooling in a nursing home if there's something you can do to avoid that,
right?
For a lot of us, though, there might not be.
Right. Yeah.
And so the pursuit of fitness, the pursuit of health, needs to fall in line with all of our other pursuits. Mm-hmm. Is this ultimately bringing glory to myself, or is this bringing glory to God?
Right.
Because if God made me in His image, and He gave me this world in which to He told me He's, you know, it's the glory of God to conceal a matter,
right?
And it's the glory of men or the glory of kings to seek it out. So, like, our job is to uncover the mysteries that God has hidden in this world, and health is a big one of those things. Like, you know, why is it that delayed gratification is so much better than instant gratification? Like, there's kind of a deep mystery there that a toddler can't understand, but a king can understand it. But it makes a whole lot more sense if you look at it from the standpoint of, this is how God made the world, and this is how I can honor Him.
Right.
So my fitness is not the end-all, be-all for His glory, but it's one of those things that I can do.
Right.
Just like if I want to be, the proverb says, you see a man who is excellent in his work, he will stand before kings.
Right.
Well, like, if you're excellent in your work so you can stand before a king, that is, well, first of all, there's the King of Kings, right? We all should be seeking to stand before that King of Kings because we are given that well done, good and faithful servant.
Right.
But there's also this sense of, if you are excellent in your work, you should want to be recognized for that so that you can give the glory to God.
Right.
So evolution kind of short circuits a lot of that because it is so inherently individualistic and self-centered, because it's like, this is all you got, and the more you get for yourself, ultimately, because the universe doesn't care, the universe isn't going to reward you or punish you. It's once you're done, you're worm food. Then there's not the men planting trees in whose shade they know they'll never sit. That doesn't happen anymore, because it's every man for himself.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me to see people who accept so much general revelation without tying it to anything. You know, the how good you feel when you work out and when you eat right and do the things that you're supposed to with your body. You're like, people love that; they feel good, and it's like, it's amazing. But they don't tie it to anything other than mere biology.
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting to me because it's just, if you have to work so hard to feel this good, like, what purpose does that have for you? How does that get you anything if it's just a temporal body? You're here on Earth. Okay, so you're gonna, like, you wouldn't rather just be laying on a beach somewhere eating the most delicious food for the rest of your life? Like, why wouldn't you just do that?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you feel the need to grind every day, get up at 5 a.m. if you don't believe that you were put on earth for a reason, and you're only given one body.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's mind-blowing to me that God has built these things. The rain falls on the just and the unjust.
Mm-hmm.
And God has built these things into the world for those who believe in him to observe and those who don't believe in him to experience.
Yeah.
So very interesting that just that perspective can promote your fitness. If you believe in you have a higher calling. You have that, like Paul says, there's a physical aspect to a spiritual calling.
Hmm.
There's something that he has to do here on earth. I discipline my body and make it my slave. He is given a body that he has to control for the purpose of his spiritual calling and for those he was influencing as well.
Yeah, so, and if you look at the fruit of the Spirit, and there's not fruits of the Spirit. It's a bunch of grapes, right? It's all the fruit.
Right.
So love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. It's all one fruit. So it's not like you can just have some of them. You got to have it all.
Right.
But it's all crowned. What's the last one? What's the crowning fruit is self-control.
Yeah.
And of course, self-control is primarily in our self-control against sinning.
Right.
Like we need to reject sin.
Yeah.
But self-control is that disciplining of the body that shows that I'm not just going to live for ease and for pleasure, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands for rest, and poverty will come on you like an armed man.
Yeah.
That type of poverty, it could be financial poverty, but also could be just like physical poverty, like physical health poverty. Like if you want to live in this modern world with all of our hyper palatable foods that are always an instant away from you, someone will literally drive it to your house and hand it to you.
Right.
If you want to live in this world without self-control, it will be like giving whiskey to a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't know how to, if you without self-control, you cannot live in this world.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just the world that we have inherited. 100 years ago, they had different battles that they had to fight. And this is the fight that we have to exercise self-control and discipline our body from is the modern tendency to consume.
Yeah.
That's what we have to guard ourselves against.
Yeah. So. We'll get into this last point here. The biggest thing with evolution is it degrades the purpose of man here on earth. If somebody, I think people today can experience everything that Solomon experienced in his writing of Ecclesiastes. He was able to do all those things because he was rich. Most people today have a cell phone that they can experience the world with.
Yeah.
And they can delve into these things until their eyes are red and it's 1 o'clock in the morning and they're like, I'm exhausted, I'm going to go to sleep. They can do that every day and they can see they're on the fast track to seeing what Solomon saw and then coming to the conclusion that this is all meaningless.
Mm.
And if they are not given an answer for that, I think that's why that like depression is so high today and men are feeling purposeless. And now there's this red pill movement coming back because they're actually giving men something to work for. And then they're being applauded for working hard. It still fails to answer why they're doing those things and why those things make them feel fulfilled in those types of areas. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a short-term gratification, but people they're easily fast-tracked today to seeing how vain the world is.
Mm-hmm.
And an evolutionary perspective is not going to get them a purposeful life.
Yeah. There's a fantastic YouTube channel called Epic Spaceman.
Okay.
And Epic Spaceman is not a Christian. He does all of these. I actually haven't watched very many of his videos, but I've showed several to my kids. And he does an incredible job of kind of showing the size of the solar system, the size of the our galaxy, the size of the known universe,
right.
Which a lot of it is kind of is guesses, you know,
right.
Because you can't observe an infinitely expanding universe.
Right.
But if you watch any of his videos, there's one on where he takes each galaxy, each known or not known galaxy, but each of the supposed galaxies that are out there in the world. We live in one, the Milky Way, and there's supposedly billions of galaxies, and he shrinks them all to the size of like Cheerios, puts them in a swimming pool, and kind of gives you like this visual comparison for how big the universe is. His takeaway from that is that even though the universe is big, even though you're, you know, this speck on a speck on a speck, you're still important. Well, why? Right. And when I talk to my kids about this, like, he can't give you a reason as to why you're important, because based off of what he said, you're not actually important at all.
Right.
You are a speck on a speck on a speck, and no one cares except for this little blip on the, you know, the timeline of history, mm-hmm. where you are there for less than an instant.
Yeah.
There is no answer that a guy like that, even though he's this incredibly gifted communicator to express the glories of the universe. Psalm 19 says, "The heavens declare the glories of God." Right?
Right.
He does an amazing job as an unbeliever of declaring the glory of God.
Right.
But because his presupposition is without God, all he can do is say, "Well, you know, compared to an atom, you're the size of a galaxy.
Right.
So you're not that small."
Yeah. Right.
Or, you know, it's like these are just kind of like. Lame, basically lame things to tell you, like, you're actually important. Like, just take my word for it, you're important.
Yeah.
It's like, don't take this knowledge and absolutely despair over it.
Right? Yeah.
Which a lot of people just said, like, wow, that's how big the universe is, and this is how small and insignificant I am.
Right.
What's the point of life?
Right.
You know, I'll cast myself off of a bridge and to my death, and no one will care.
Right. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, if you, even just looking up at the stars, on, like, even if you're a Christian, you look up and you feel insignificant.
Yeah.
And you're like, am I really making a difference in this world?
Yeah.
And to combat that, you have to know that God put you on this earth. You have to believe it.
Yeah.
You have to. It's not. You can't just be something that you acknowledge and be like, "This is what I've been taught. This is what I know to be true."
Sure.
It's something that you have to believe, and it influences your actions.
Yeah. You and Christians need to reject that because there is that. It really is a sinful tendency to see your own insignificance, because
mm-hmm.
that's not how the Bible sees man.
Right.
Psalm 8, David says, "When I look at the heavens and the moon and the stars that you've created, what is man that you're mindful of him,
mm-hmm.
and the son of man that you take notice of him? You've set him a little lower than the angels." So it's like all of the glories of the heavens, and God sees you as more glorious than them. Like, God, because you're made in his image, you actually have far more purpose than even the vastness of the universe. So that is like, absolutely, if you can't get that idea that God sees you as significant, and that the significance of God creating this universe for you, it's like he created this universe and he made it like basically infinitely big. And people will say, like, "Oh, that's a waste of space. Like, why would God do that?" It's like, he did it because he's God, and he's overwhelmingly gracious, and he gives over an abundant, more than we could ever ask or think. So he gave us like the solar system, this galaxy, this universe that is so much bigger than we can comprehend even, and yet he says you're more important than all of this.
Right.
Than all you are this pinnacle of creation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's amazing how something like just this the fundamental like assumption of origins of life, if you're on one side or the other, how much it can flow to little daily aspects of your life, from work to fitness, all the way to what is your like purpose here on earth. Like just starting with one of these two options, you're going to get very different answers in how you live your life. Well, you should. Most people are not consistent. They're still going to live by the presupposition of Christianity, but
that's true,
because it feels better that way.
Well, and you know, from an evolutionary standpoint, you could take something like, say, porn, and you could say, well, it's just you know, you're hardwired to seek after this kind of you know, response, stimuli and response.
Right.
And you know, it might be good for you, it might be bad for you, you know, like there's all kinds of debates even amongst non-Christians about whether or not porn use is good for you or not.
Yeah.
A lot of people are coming to the conclusion that it's like it's a hardcore drug, basically.
Right.
But for a Christian, you look at the idea of consuming porn and you think, well, I actually have a soul.
Right.
And that soul of mine is actually more valuable than all of the created world. It's more valuable than my physical body, at least right now.
Yeah.
And protecting that soul is important, because Scripture tells us that our bodies are the temple of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we are not protecting our if we're not protecting our temples. And I would be more of the mindset that the temple, protecting the temple would be not sinning against it sexually, as opposed to, you know, making sure you're hitting the gym and eating right. I think that you could probably use the temple, you know, our bodies being a temple, to kind of encourage people to eat right and to hit the gym and whatnot. But primarily it is, you know, don't sin against your body sexually.
Right.
Like, take captive your thoughts.
Yeah.
Well, if you live in a world of random chance and Darwinian evolution, the last thing the universe cares about is your thought life.
Right.
But if you live in a world where God actually created you as the pinnacle of his creation, set you a little lower than the angels, sent his own son to save you from the destruction of sin, then even your thought life is important.
Yep.
And that even your thought life is what he cares about.
Yep.
And so that idea of, not only do we reject Darwinian evolution, this idea of just random chance coming to the known universe, but we actually even say, we go further and we say, God cares about every aspect of my life, from what I physically eat to what I physically, how I physically discipline my body, to how I physically discipline my mind and my thoughts.
Yeah.
And porn is just one example of that. Anything that would destroy this the body that God has given you is something that needs to be rejected, because God made that.
Right.
You're not just a random product of chance.
Yeah.
God made that you for a reason, for a purpose.
Yep.
And so don't throw that gift away.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a good spot to end on. I think having that fundamental belief that God has put us on earth for a reason. He's given us a soul, and that our eternity matters. We're not going into the grave to be gone forever and forgotten. It is something that there's so many places you can go with this, but taking care of your soul, and that includes taking care of your mind and your body.
Yep.
Our continued discussions on the intersection of faith and fitness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep talking through stuff like this. So
yeah, your soul and your body, they're interconnected.
Yeah.
There's no disconnecting of them. So if your body is not well, your soul is not well. If your soul is not well, your body certainly won't be well. That's why when you're sick, you feel like this such like an oppression on everything. Like some of us, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it's like, just take me home, Lord. Like, I'm just ready to be done with life when you're sick, because when your body is not well, your whole being is not well. And so this idea of fitness being more than just disciplining the body, it's also a disciplining of the soul, because body and soul go together. When we die, our bodies go in the ground. Well, what are they doing there? They're waiting for the day of resurrection when our renewed soul and our renewed body will be reunited again. And so, like, part of our time here on earth is just making sure that we're redeeming that time of stewarding well this body and soul that God has given us, because it's the talent. We don't want to bury it in the ground, because we want to invest it, spend it. And that's why you'll oftentimes hear from me, like, for our guys who are out there really motivated for fitness, like, that's great, but don't let that be your whole reason for existence either, because there's more to your investment in this world than just fitness.
Absolutely.
But it is a key thing, and you can't have an unhealthy body and not have your soul deeply affected by that.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I think the work that we're doing here, talking about fitness, we couldn't really have a job doing this. I don't know if people didn't all believe that. If people all believed that fitness was like an important thing that we should care about, you know, if everybody was fit and they were all worrying about like building the kingdom of God, then we'd be out of a job.
Yeah.
But the reason we're doing this is because people are out there that don't believe that, and they need to. Yeah. I don't know, get their act together.
Yeah, so let's go. Let's do it.
So, yeah, I think that's about it, unless you got any closing thoughts.
Oh, it's great, man.
Okay. All right. So thank you guys for joining us. That's it for this episode of the Athos Life Podcast. Now go out, train with purpose, chase excellence, and live the ascent. Have a great day, you guys.